It is claimed by his friends that Harris Goldsmith can remember every note of music he's ever heard, and he's done a lot of listening. When asked about this, he admits he does recall quite a bit of his New York music listening life, such as the Toscanini performances he can tell you about in detail.
Well, the one that really blew me away is the Eroica that he did on December 6, 1953, because I already was well familiar with the piece from his 1949 recording, and that was such a thrill to hear it surpass.
And more detail.
One of our concerts that was near the end, he had an amazing recovery when he did that concert with the Verdi Te Deum. It was just like all his years were just swept away, and he was absolutely on the peak of his prime, you know.
And he heard the great pianists.
I remember coming home from a 1949 concert of Moiseevich, and I was just delirious. I thought it was so singing, so beautiful.
And Goldsmith formed early strong opinions about all of this.
I'll tell you about Horowitz's playing. He has this cute little way of goosing phrases, you know, and I felt it just struck me as unwholesome.
Goldsmith was a young pianist himself at the time, eventually studying with Robert Goldsand, who had studied with Moritz Rosenthal, who himself had been a student of none other than Franz Liszt. Then, in the 50s, as now, life in New York wasn't easy.
You know, I had aspirations for concertizing, but that's a rich man's occupation. And in the meantime, I had to earn money practically. So I was playing, accompanying ballet classes, you know, and I was teaching little kids who really didn't want to study. And I remember going all the way out to Brooklyn and then being met that, oh, yeah, my sister's not coming because she has a date with her boyfriend, you know.
But Goldsmith's passionate, opinionated music listening was already his real trademark. It seemed obvious to one of his teachers that the place for him was a leading record magazine of the time called High Fidelity. This way he could listen to records, form his opinions, which he did anyway, and write about them. So he suggested his students send in a few sample reviews.
And then I got a letter, "Dear Mr. Goldsmith, I was wondering if you'd be interested in coming doing some reviews for us." And I did, would I?
And as other reviewers dropped away, opportunities opened.
They asked me if I would become a regular reviewer. And, of course, they sent me 38 records in 1 month, you know. But I did it. I survived it. And that's what happened to me.
And suddenly it was Harris Goldsmith, the critic, who was ushering a whole generation of music listeners through the complex array of classical releases in what could be called the heyday of the classical LP.
And I think they were really finally happy when they sent me the Chopin Preludes with Alexander Brailovsky, and I really roasted it. I said, Alexander Brailovsky indulges in cliches and vagaries of taste. His performance is grotesque, fragmentary, and clumsy. And I just closed with a thing, the piano sound has a thumpy bass.
He was a kid in his early 20s at the time.
How did you have the nerve to do that as a young,
They asked my opinion, but I did things, so I thought I knew what I was doing, you know.
But you didn't have any concern about what people might think or what the artist might think or what the, I don't know.
Oh, at that time I was grandstanding it. I was just honored and thrilled at the fact that people were reading me, you know. It's amazing the influence I developed, because I wasn't trying for it. I just had convictions, and that's what I said.
Later, when High Fidelity, the record magazine, merged with Musical America, the concert magazine, Goldsmith, fixated in a trance-like state, as always, could be seen in the press seats of Manhattan concert halls every night of the week, expanding his reviewing empire to live performances, much to the delight of Harris Goldsmith, the pianist. It was now time for him to try his pianistic wings.
I made my debut just when I started writing for Musical America. So I was going to everybody's concerts up to the day of my concert, you know, for weeks. And I was going crazy when I finally got to the town hall and was on the stage at town hall, and in the middle of the first piece, it hit me. Wow, I'm here. This is it. I'm here. And I freaked out. I was so nervous, and I don't remember what happened, you know.
What happened is that Harris Goldsmith became the rarest of all things, a performing pianist who was also a powerful working music critic at the same time.
There were a lot of people who really thought it's a freak show, a critic who plays the piano, you know, some of them just don't like the idea of it at all.
After all, there was the old cliché about critics.
A critic is one who knows the tune but can't play it.
But Goldsmith prevailed. One important reviewer of the time, Irving Culloden, gave him a rave. He rather enjoyed the idea of his colleague's double life.
And he said that Goldsmith may be either the best pianist among critics or the best critic among pianists. And that changed everything. That broke the ice, I think.
And so the natural question is, did Goldsmith the critic ever become a little too tough on Goldsmith the pianist? He says no. He actually liked trying to rise to his own stringent standards.
I really enjoyed performing, and when something went well, I guess I had an egotistical thrill in it too, of course. I'm not so selfless.
Harris Goldsmith still lives and writes in the New York area, and though he doesn't perform much anymore, his Beethoven CD of earlier performances is now available. And his fiercely independent critical views are still in evidence, as he writes about the modern music scene.
There's a new crop coming up. I've been listening, going through, hearing a lot of people and taking it in, and there are some wonderful players, but the managers push really hard, you know, and I'm not going to have my arms twisted.
No way. Not the man who wrote, "The piano sound has a thumpy bass." For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkill.